Okay.
He's ready.
All right. All right, call to order the August 9th meeting of the Devil's Lake Water Improvement District. Hey, first order of business is to approve the consent agenda. Motion to approve the consent agenda, please. Second?
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay, consent agenda passes. Public comment.
Welcome.
Mitchell Moore, 2929 Northeast Loop Drive. Like I say, I never want to miss an opportunity to talk about the lake. I really tonight wanted to extend a real great thank you to the district for the revival. I made it there for an hour or so, although it went a lot longer than that, and I know there are a lot of great events. It looked like when I was there, a lot of people were enjoying it, and I hear good tales from that beyond. It was awesome to get the Devil's Lake creature placed on the lake. I thought that was great that it was done at the revival. And just a stunning amount of pre-event publicity. You guys really worked that very well. And thanks to Seth for a job well done and everybody else who worked on it. Also, thanks for, I see from the staff report that some of the comments made last month turned into action on Thompson Creek and the lake monitoring, and I appreciate that. I'd love to hear more details during the regular session. If you, the last two items I want to talk about are kind of non-agenda items. If you'll just let me do them now, then it'll maybe be quicker, because one of them is normally an agenda item, water quality. I just know we're looking kind of like we're at the verge of a bloom, so I'm curious to get your comments on what you saw out there yesterday. And the other one was lake level, but as it pertains to starting the period of reducing the lake level to balance the flows, I thought it might be a good idea for the district to kind of visit that tonight so that it's not an uncertainty as we go, but a certainty. I know several changes happened in the last year. We've obviously got a new point of beginning. The city's begin drawing water for tribal use, and so I'd suggest that the target at the end of the season could be either 8.7 or 8.9, depending on your viewpoint. A lot of this came out of discussions May through August in 2010. Several items were under consideration: the annual lake level discussions, the creation and approval of the evaporation method for balancing the lake outflow, a request for an exemption for balancing it was done then, and the consideration of the city's change in point of diversion, and of course the discovery that there was an error in the lake gauge. So at that time, the decision was made that the lake level would be 9.53. and that we would use an evaporation method to balance the outflow, and I believe, looking back, it was 0.67 inches in August per week and 0.50, a total of 4.68 inches, or roughly 5 inches, which is, I think, what we've been doing. At the time, Greg Beeman said we could basically take into account the draw from the golf course. However, thinking that through, using the evaporation method, it seems to me that would be more or less a moot point, because we're just taking into account evaporation, and so taking into account what's being drawn by the golf course would simply, I guess, change the amount that goes over the dam, not necessarily how much we lower the lake. So by my looking at it, we're at 9.1 as of the 1st of August. That was what you posted on Facebook. There's a nice picture of it. With the subtraction of 4.68, that puts us at 8.52 inches, which is approximately 8.7 if you convert it to decimals, which in talking to David earlier, I think that's about where he puts it. So I guess I would, like I say, while I would, you might guess I would be shooting to get those 2 inches out of there. It seems to me it's a reasonable point to shoot at the end of the season for about 8.7. Hopefully that matches what you guys were looking at. I thought it would be wise to decide that tonight so that people know and they're not guessing and wondering where it might be at the end of the night. You could always try to ask Greg Beeman for an exemption again since you didn't fully exercise your right, but at the very least, I'd suggest you set that end point tonight. And that's all I have to say. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Moore.
Thank you.
Devil's Lake Plan, Septic Tank Revitalization Program, Seth.
I have just a little bit to offer information on for that. It looks like we're going to be having a meeting. By we, I mean city administration, city councilor, and then with the county administration and the head of their planning. I think at the last meeting we had talked a little bit about, you know, there were some complications between who would do the reporting and how that report would be submitted and then what language they would want to see. And I think that we have hammered that out for the most part, and I think this meeting is just a chance for some kind of like the higher-ups to have that discussion and really make sure that we're on the same page for that. So it should be happening in the next month. So that's the only update I have for the septic tank.
Okay. Can you kind of give us an advance notice when it is in case we want to participate in that?
Sure. We'll do. Thanks.
Okay, Save Our Shorelines.
Again, for another month, just if people are interested in doing a Save Our Shoreline project, we'll pay 75% of the cost of doing a shoreline restoration project on your property. Again, that takes a little bit of time for us to plan those, so the earlier you get a hold of us, the better. Fall's a really great time for us to plant, so if you're interested in doing that, please get a hold of the district for that. And then also, we've been working on this video a little bit, and our hope was to bring something last month through the revival. There's just a lot going on. So I think this month we'll have time to put together, at least shoot that video, and hopefully have something to show to you guys by the September meeting. And really the intention of that is to be like a promotional tool that we can use to promote the Save Our Shoreline program. And then finally, we have a rain garden training coming up. That's going to be Saturday, October 25th. We're doing that at the Lincoln City Community Center, and so far we've been doing like a couple of shoreline restorations, Save Our Shoreline meetings that we've been having for the public. It's an educational opportunity. I think I've given that the last 3 times for about a year and a half. We try to do them twice a year. So I think this time we're going to bring in a real expert in the subject of rain gardens. She's also going to put in like a shoreline component into that. And that's going to be by Maria Cahill, who's an engineer out of Portland. Really intelligent person, really doing some really forward-thinking projects, really looking at, instead of engineering around what's there, really using what is there. So this is a really great opportunity for us. That's going to be from 10 a.m. to noon, Lincoln City Community Center, Saturday, October 25th. And it's going to be $20 to join in on that, and that's going to have both a classroom component and a field component.
Any questions for Seth?
The previous three you did, weren't they free? I was wondering why there's a cost factor.
It's going to be to pay for Maria Cahill to come down.
Is she collecting that, or are we?
She is. Yeah, so really our role, it's a Salmon Drift Creek Watershed Council is helping to promote it. What's the other one? The one just north of us.
South, like actually.
South?
Oh, yeah, no, the Nestucca, Neskowin Watershed Council, right. Thank you. There's also some involvement with Yaquina down south, so that's what I was going to...
Right, she's going to be doing another one of those in Newport also. So that, yeah, our position there is just really promoting it and trying to get the word out, and that's about it. So it'll be no cost to us either.
Well, we picked up the cost of the rental, which is about $70 or something.
Other than the cost of the rental, there will be no cost to us.
Thanks. Station management, Paul.
Okay, so so we've got 4 components in this now as we're building this. The grass carp application is the foremost, and that's what Joe Eilers from Max Depth Aquatics is working on. you would like to go ahead and get your guys' reviews of that, too. I've done my second draft review in part. I'm going to continue to do that as well. And if we can maybe get together individually or over email and, you know, or, you know, in person, whatever, and get some of your feedback, I can compile that and get that to Joe. He's really obviously ready to move on this part of it. We've got a lot of other steps to go, though. This one is a pretty critical one, though, so we don't want to not get this, because this can be a make or break point for the district on this process. And you know, if you had a chance to look at the draft, I know that it's pretty significant. He's put a lot of effort into it, and so I'd like to get your feedback on that. The aquatic plant survey we did, the first section of that in July, where Portland State University did that. I participated just briefly on one of the days. And you know, there's some good news. A lot of native plants in Devil's Lake. Not in high density, but they're out there. And so that's a good seed bank or propagation means for Devil's Lake outside of the real nasty non-natives that dominated the lake in the 80s and 90s, which are like Eurasian water milfoil and Brazilian Elodea. Those two, as to my knowledge, were not found. There were some other non-natives found, but we'll get that full report after they do their second survey, which is, I think, scheduled for September. I think that's pretty much it for that. Yeah, they did collect like 100 points of GPS points of where they found vegetation and you know, map that too. So we have that to go back to say, oh, well, we know there's a population of a healthy, good plant there. You know, we want to encourage that. Oh, there's a non-native there. You know, let's go pull that out or what have you, just as a starting point. But by and large, as you might suspect and know, currently, the lake is mostly unvegetated as it sits. The economic impact study, Seth's going to work on that. We talked about that a couple meetings ago. I look to have that done in December. And then an engineering study. So there's a requirement within the permit to have a study done of all the inlets and outlets of Devil's Lake. This seems to be old hat information for us, but it is a requirement on the application. I'm going to work with ODF&W to try to make use of existing data regarding LIDAR data that's been flown recently, just the bathymetric stuff we have already. My goal is that we won't have to do a full study. We budgeted for it because we knew it was a potential. We may still have to get somebody to say, stamp, yes, those are all the inlets and outlets of Devil's Lake as with an engineer stamp. If that's the case, then that's the case. We'll do that. But, you know, we could save ourselves a few $1,000 potentially by not doing that. And I think that's pretty much the four components. For the sewer, if you want to move on, I do have some information from Brian. First off, just to congratulate him and his family on the soon to be, they're marrying off their daughter, I guess, and tonight's their rehearsal dinner, as I understand it. So congratulations to them. And in fact, with the movement of our meeting date kind of changed, you know, I think he writes here that his daughter thought that our meeting was the first Thursday and planned around our meetings, and then, of course, we changed our meetings. So, of course, no fault of them, and I wouldn't think that we would mind having him miss a meeting if it meant missing something like that anyhow. So just to read what he provided. Apologize for not being at the meeting, and I explained why there. He just wants to report that since our last meeting, the letters, and this is regarding the sewer extensions, the LID around Regatta Grounds, he has sent some letters out to the property owners that were to be affected by this. And he says, so far the letters have gone out to the property owners describing the changes that have occurred to the project since their support was solicited by his first letter over a year ago. That letter went out 2 weeks ago, and all the responses to date, with the exception of one, are still positive in support of the LID for sewer and paving. It does appear that we'll be able to maintain a majority support among the property owners for the LID project. And he says, I will be able to report back at our next meeting with certainty whether or not that's the case. If so, the next step will be for the City Council to place the matter on the agenda for approval at by the City Council, and I hope to be able to give you a time frame for when that will occur at our next meeting, too. So if you have any questions, you know, you can definitely get a hold of him. You know how to get a hold of him there. So thank him for that, and again, congratulations. But it's really positive. I mean, you know, there were some subtle changes. He went over those last meeting pretty extensively as to how the financing would have to be. Mandatory hookup time period, I think, was like 15 years, you know, like an end point. Anyhow, that was all detailed last time. But moving forward.
Okay, great. Communications report.
I'll let you talk about the Lake Revival, but I'll run some photos of that, too. Are you talking about that?
Okay, so we got some phases of this to go through here. First off, we're a guest, and I just announce it each time, so we get people listening with KBCH in the morning on the now third Tuesday. It's a morning program. KBCH AM 1400 starts at about 7:30, our portion of it does. And you can find a podcast on that, too, at their kbcham.com website. Seth gave a really informative presentation along with Maria Cahill, who we spoke to earlier about, regarding some rain gardens and kind of prompt moving this another session forward. Originally, that was planned in February. They did it, I think, in July now, right? And then for our fifth year in a row, we hosted a group from Linfield College for a half-day short course on the Rock Creek Dam modification for Coho Passage. My apologies to Mr. Weldon. I think we had a miss-up. He was going to hopefully come next year. Maybe we can make that connection. But it was open to the public. We didn't get any other takers, but that would be extended next year if we do it again. It seems like, for all reasons to do so, he had a pretty good sized crowd. I think he had 9 students this year, up from last year, a little bit down from previous years. But and then the Devil's Lake Revival, and I'm going to actually get the projector going and let Seth talk about this. And we got some pictures that are on Facebook that people can look at, and let it take them from there.
So I think pretty much everyone in here was at the revival. So you know, we did the Devil's Lake Revival on Saturday, August 4th, just last week. From a planning perspective, everyone had fun, everybody was safe, and a lot of people were using the lake. So that's a positive event. But there's just a ton of people who I would just quickly like to take a moment and publicly thank for their participation. Oregon Surf Shop, they were involved in doing the stand-up paddleboard lessons. They do that totally for free for us. Blue Heron Landing offered us a free pontoon and a great deal on kayaks. Moe's Restaurant, Oregon Coast Today. Dave and Nikki Price, they upgraded an ad for us. We had the cover story in the Oregon Coast Today, and that's just a great publication, and those two always go really out of their way to help the district out. So thank you to them. Just Add Water Safety, also known as JAWS, was there. Business for Excellence in Youth, that's also the Beefy program. They were there slinging delicious food for everybody. Coast Guard Auxiliary, specifically Flotilla Commander Larry Cox. North Lincoln Fire and Rescue, specifically Captain Jim Coos, Peter Robertson, and all the volunteers that they had there. And an extra big thanks to Peter Robertson, who let us use his trailer. And without the use of that trailer, there's no way we could have gotten those water polo goals down there. And it was almost like the perfect size, so thank you to Peter. Audubon Society, U.S. Forest Service, Lincoln Soil and Water Conservation District, North Lincoln Sanitary, and again, North Lincoln Sanitary, Mark Salins, thank you to him. They always have like a big event that same weekend, so Dean Williams comes down and mans their booth, so thank you to Dean. Salmon Drift Creek Watershed Council, Really big thank you to Let There Be Arts. They were the ones that we collaborated with them to have the Creature and the Devil's Lake Revival, have the Creature dedication happen on the same day as the Devil's Lake Revival. So thank you. I think that was a really big draw, and I think those two events really played well off of each other. The Ford Family Foundation Leadership Program, the Lincoln City cohort, they're the ones who are involved in trying to put the stage up at Regatta Grounds, and we'll talk about that later. Sheriff Dotson and the Lincoln County Sheriff Department. Water polo, Billy Martin from the Portland Water Polo Club. He was the one who brought the players down for us. Chris Edison from the Willamette Valley Water Polo. They were the ones that were able to hook us up with goals for the event. Water break. Robin Kohler, she comes and does the EnviroScape for us. Thank you very much to Robin. And then the City of Lincoln City really helped us out a lot this year. Specifically the VCB, that's the Visitors Convention Bureau. So Sandy Pfaff and Katara Woodbridge from the Parks Department, Gary Newman, he makes sure the park is looking good for us, really helps us block everything off down there. Gail Kimberling and Jason Garding from also from Parks, but more of the recreation side of it. And then, of course, David Hawker, the administrator, helping us to get that event going through. And then finally, a big thank you to all of our board members. I think everyone made it down, to our captains, David Skirvin, Randy Weldon. They were driving the pontoon boats. Bill Sexton was also driving pontoon boats. He's a contractor for the district. His wife Julie was there. Thank you to Julie Sexton. She was helping out, facilitating, make sure everyone got on the boat, and not too many people got on the boat. And then, of course, Alyssa Clayton, our intern, who helped out a lot with kids' activities, and Paul, who I steal him from a lot of his work. And is kind of my go-to on a lot of things. It really wouldn't be possible without Paul. So thank you so much to all these people. I'm sure that I forgot some. To them, I apologize. But events like this can't happen without all these people being super professional, on time, punctual, and easy to work with, and all these groups are. And then otherwise, the revival went great. As far as like attendance goes, I think it's always kind of hard to tell. One of the ways that we're able to tell that is by how many people sign up for the kayak drawing that we give away. I think we had about 200 people do that, and there's certainly more than 200 people down there throughout the day. So yeah, thanks everybody for your help, and I don't know, this is just a really great event. There's just always a really cool time in it for me when I just like look out in the water and like the pictures that you're seeing, and it's just, you know, you have like a pontoon boat in the background and then a couple of other boats just like hanging out, kind of watching the events from the water. And we have like a water polo game going on, and stand-up paddle boards are cruising all over, and just all these people really enjoying Devil's Lake. So it's really good for us when we're doing so much education all year and everything to like have this one day where it's like, let's go party, let's have a good time. So thank everyone for their support.
Thanks, Seth. Did a good job.
Thank you.
If people want to look at that, they can just go to our Facebook page and see that, so people can look at those again. And we encourage people to do that and to like us. We like people to like us on Facebook.
Okay. You have water quality postings next, Paul?
Sorry?
You have water quality postings next in the community?
Okay, excuse me. So we actually, right at the beginning of end of last week, we started to see a bloom in Devil's Lake, blue-green algae bloom, a Habs bloom. It's a bit scary to think that we're going to have that right at our event. In fact, I was pretty nervous that morning. The lake was greening up pretty quick. Typically, at the beginning of a bloom is when if there is a risk, it's at its lowest because the organisms haven't had a chance to die off. There aren't as many generally in the water. But that changes quickly. And in fact, it happened basically between like Friday and Saturday to a large degree. Looking at the water Monday, apparently it was fairly good. I was out there again on Wednesday, and we did a full sampling of the lake for for our microcystin testing. Unfortunately, the microcystin test kit, there was some of the reagents were bad or insufficient to finish the test, so we actually had invalid data for those, which we've ordered a new kit. We're going to try to do it again Wednesday. That's typically what we do, is we have this kind of three-tiered system to monitor HABs, harmful algal blooms. First off is just the visual indicator, and that's what we've been doing since basically Memorial Day. If it looks like there's a bloom, we set up to sample at our very next Wednesday, which is what we did this last Wednesday. And, you know, obviously I'd like to have more information for you. I don't at the time. But I went back out to Regatta Grounds this morning, and the bloom that was, you know, stuffed back in there the day before was pretty much gone. So these things are very transient, and they're at the whim of the wind, often currents. So you can have a area that's very green in part of the lake, and then the other part just absolutely clear. And you know, right now we're at a point where we've got a bloom that's happening. We expect it to last probably for 4 to 6 weeks. You know, I mean, these typically run their course. It's the lake cooling down is where it tends to, once the sun rays are at a lower angle and it's September and it's cooler, that's when the lake tends to revert back if a bloom happens. So that's not always the case. I mean, we've had winter blooms too. You know, these organisms are fickle, to say the least. So that's where we are with that. I think there was a question about the bacteria testing, new sample site that we put in. In fact, I'd thank the Riches who are in the audience today for allowing us access to their property to add this Thompson Creek Canal site, which is different than Thompson Creek. Thompson Creek feeds the canal, but the canal site is a better indication of accessible water that people are actually recreating in. So we changed our format last month to include this new site and to not include the site that's up the hill from there where nobody's actually going to be actually recreating. And then similarly, we took the Rock Creek sample site off because that's also not on the lake. But we're still collecting those data. And they're still available. You know, if somebody wants them, we can, you know, obviously get them to them. We still are making use of that data. But for now, we've got that new Thompson Creek Canal site that, you know, it was hot this week. It's obviously being fed by Thompson Creek, which is hotter. Yeah, it's just to a lesser extent, potentially. There's some mixing in there. There's the water. There's a whole canal in there that it mixes with. You know, it has to go through whatever distance, you know, of sediment potentially to get through. So that can knock down bacteria, but it is still, you know, it's definitely a more useful, I think, data set. But it's just also good to note that, yeah, we still have problems up the hill, and it wasn't our intent to just change the format or the data presentation to ignore the situation, because the situation is still relevant, and we are going to be trying to do some DNA work up that system late summer, early fall still. That's still in the works. So that's pretty much a summary of all the kind of water quality issues to date.
Okay. Hey, I got a question for you. You know, as we're identifying, you know, the amount of, you know, visible, you know, blue-green algae, do you take pictures of what you're classifying as, you know, visible in the water column versus, you know, high density, et cetera?
Yeah, we try to. And, you know, sometimes we go out and we've got a good battery, and then it's not as consistent as we'd always like to do. But we have done, and it is kind of it is subjective for sure, to say what's high and what's moderate and what's kind of low. But having looked at it enough, having taken samples, we do have samples that we took that are in-house, you know, stored from Save Regatta Grounds. We actually, I was remiss to mention this, we actually, one element of Wednesday's sampling did go forward, and we will get some data back on, and that is actually the cell counts. So we shipped those sample bottles from Regatta Grounds, one point out in the Mid-Lake, and then our integrated photic zone sample to our analyst in Bainbridge Island, Mary Beth Gibbons. And so we'll get those back in probably about 4 days, which will tell us basically how many of the organisms are in the water at the time of the sampling. And typically, you know, a shoreline sample is going to be higher than a lake sample, typically.
Depending on the wind.
What's that?
Depending on the wind. Okay. I'd like to request that, you know, I was looking at your daily report, and I think when you go out and you do the sampling, if you could add a little more detail in there to say, hey, here's what I'm seeing, mm-hmm. just to kind of give us a heads up. Because, I mean, I saw that you went out and did it, so, mm-hmm. you know, I was out on the lake when mm-hmm. when you were mm-hmm. out there. And then I followed it back to, you know, when you did your initial posting. But I think just from a board member perspective, I'd mm-hmm. like to have, you know, that first heads up on, you know, what you're thinking. And
sure.
what, you know, just so I know what's going on.
You bet. You
so,
bet.
You know, a little more detail on that daily when you do those would be great. Anything else on quality? Anyone?
Okay. Well, I do have, and it's not on water quality. It goes back to what you said about the results of the couple of scientists coming here and looking at what vegetation we have out there. And you mentioned that there was, did you say that there was a good percentage that was native?
In fact, most were native. I think they found like 22 species, and maybe, and I haven't seen their full, but you know, what they were telling me on the boat, they're like, yeah, we saw a couple non-natives, but by and large, it was native.
Okay, so
species.
Do you know, when we put the carp in, what, 26 years ago, was it mostly invasive species?
Yeah, and
that were gone.
Yeah.
So does this mean? Would this suggest that these fish don't like the native vegetation so much as they do what they had when they came here?
No, unfortunately not. Yeah, they're pretty much non-specific herbivores, so they'll pretty much eat whatever. There's a couple things that they don't go after, like those lily pads that you see out. They're just like too tough, or there's nothing, you know, it's just a really stocky thing, and they'll pretty much eat most anything. In fact, most of the studies that I've seen just show, you know, there's a few species that they will wait on, maybe, but generally they're just foraging. They're not really looking specifically for one thing or another.
Well, these places where there were clumps of weeds, that's what I understand. There were certain areas that had quite a few. Was there some reason why they were difficult for the fish to get to?
Well, yeah. And so, you know, one of the areas that we have quite a bit of vegetation mm-hmm. is this First Street Canal system, Crystal Lagoon. And, you know, it was my thinking as we started to see this kind of resurgence that the remaining carp were just, you know, happy not having to go in there and could find food elsewhere. While we were in there, though, we did see some carp, at least one. So we know that they're still, you know, getting in there if they want to. And so I, you know, it's a shallower spot. There's more people around. There's, you know, a potential kayaker or whatever running through there. If you were a fish and you had enough banquet food down the way, you might not just go in there. And I think that's likely the cause. You know, it's just that it's just, you know, other fresh growth, you know, just green grass down the way. So,
okay.
Yeah.
I could piggyback on Noel's thing. I had a question I thought about a little bit later. We had talked previously about the couple invasives you did find, and one was coontail. Is that correct? Remember?
Yeah, I believe so, yeah. So,
was coontail an issue for us back in the 80s before milfoil really came onto the scene?
You know, I'd have to look at that, honestly. I don't know offhand. It was really milfoil. Eurasian water milfoil was just dominant. And then what happened was the grass carp took them out, and the Brazilian Elodea supplanted that. And, you know, that was just kind of a switch. In fact, I think they had actually more biomass of the plant post, you know, recently post grass carp, you know, like say 88 or so, as the switch happened because of the Brazilian Heledia just kind of was denser. As far as the coontail, I would have to check. It was definitely the Eurasian water milfoil and those right. and the Brazilian Heledia.
From a lot of the research, I've been looking at other lakes and invasive weeds. Some of them, it's all coontail and it's just plugged the lakes entirely. I'd hate to see that become the third invasive that hits our lake. So I'd really, on this next go out, I'm real interested to see how that's doing back in that area.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I can look at that. I can get back to you as to what if it was a minor component one.
I think he
at
said
the time,
there was just
I just
one,
don't recall
one plant they saw, but
one plant's all it takes. All right, yeah.
I'm real interested to see in September where the coontail has gone from there. So, just a reminder.
Okay, safety report.
Yeah, so just like to thank Alyssa, our intern, for going through all of our MSDS's reports. Those are material safety data sheets, and made a really nice succinct summary of you know, the four components. Is it flammable? Is it caustic? You know, what within the actual chemical, and made that for our lab. So thank her for that. And you know, we had a really big event, I guess, over the last weekend, which I think is a really testament to the you know, to the district and those the people that participated in it. And we didn't see, I think we had, do we have a Band-Aid that got used? I don't know. I think we did really well. That was a big, I think sunburns were an issue. In fact, we did have sunscreen available because we knew that the sun was going to be so hot that day. But, you know, it was pretty fantastic. So, knock on wood, I guess. You know. Okay, so we've had, I think, now five meetings of this TMDL for the DEQ's hosting. Last one was down in Florence. This meeting was a culmination of the previous four. In fact, they had reviews of the bacterial technical working group that I'm on. We had a bacterial technical working group meeting that week, too. And then they had a sediment working group summary and the temperature working group summary. And so really it's what's happening right now is they are finishing how they are going to determine loading and issues with loading of, say, bacteria and other items. And then what comes following that is how do you resolve that loading. And so for a lot of things, they're complementary. You can reduce the amount of bacteria loading coming off a property, increase the cooling effect by having trees, and the sediment all by having trees on the property. So it's like one of those really simple, obvious things that needs to occur, but there's a big gap. You know, there's a lot of properties in Devil's Lake, Devil's Lake's watershed, that are, you know, have had forest impacts or vegetation loss from homeowners. That's a simple remedy, and that's certainly one that we want to encourage, and we do encourage. But that's taking part across the whole watershed too, of the Midcoast watershed all the way down to Florence. So, you know, the other solutions, though, you know, that come forward will be things that deal with road maintenance, things for sediment, other things that are maybe not as significant for us, but are important because it's things like sediment coming down through a watershed from, say, a road blowout that carries nutrients, additional nutrients, surges of nutrients, which then feeds the harmful algal blooms or the weeds. So all of these practices that hopefully will come into place will be required eventually, because this will become basically law. You know, this is a statewide, a state-run program. It's not like it's not arbitrary. It's going to have to happen. We have to have reductions. All of these things, you know, jointly will benefit other aspects of our lake. which we're listed for. So as you'll remember, we're listed for pH and chlorophyll A in the lake. Okay, now that's basically what you're seeing out there right now, green stuff floating around the lake. And the pH is, becomes changed often because of the cyanobacteria, the blue-green algae. In order to reduce that, you got to get rid of the nutrients. And so that's, again, coming from sediment, coming from septic systems, you know, functional septic systems, no less as ones that may be completely non-functional, which would have a greater source. You know, everything from just weather, natural weathering, but what we have to get back to is what nature can handle on its own. You know, nature's going to provide some nutrients, but also nature's going to know how to deal with them. It's those extra ones that we have to bring out and stop. And so this is getting at that, and it's you know, it's a 2 month two year process just to get the TMDL in place. And then it's going to be, you know, certainly decades before you'll see the effects of these things long term, because, you know, it's going to mean like a, you know, logger's got to maybe change some additional practices that are already fairly strict. After the 90s, the logging laws changed significantly. Forest Practices Act came in, and the agriculture, same thing. You know, I think maybe what we need. Certainly for Devil's Lake, we have a lot of homeowners, and that the urban aspect of a watershed isn't maybe as readily acknowledged on the mid-coast because we think we're kind of rural, but by and large we're not. Certainly around the lake, we're pretty high density. So, you know, there's a lot of things that we as humans have a role to play in, and these are going to become... solutions that will be hopefully the cheap ones first. Plant a tree. I mean, this isn't crazy overstepping, like you have to change everything about your property. This is get a buffer on the property, you know. Keep what's uphill, you know, keep it from coming downstream. Those type of solutions first, and then whatever else is needed secondary, you know. So that's, I think, kind of what to look forward to as this develops. End of report.
Okay. Any questions for Paul? Turn to report.
Okay. So I've been sampling every week, monitoring the pH, temperature, conductivity, dissolved oxygen content, succedaneous depth, and turbidity in the lake, as well as watching for cyanobacteria blooms and posting water quality updates with Paul and Seth. We have gone out in the boat recording Secchi depth in the pelagic zone and collected samples along the canal leading to Thompson Creek. I am learning boat safety and basic procedures of launching and docking the boat. I edited the shoreline planning guide, reformatting the invasive species pages to merge into the rest of the document. I worked on kids' activities for the Devil's Lake Revival and helped create the radio advertisement for the event. Seth and I have been maintaining the rain gardens in Regatta Park and East Devils Lake State Park, weeding and watering weekly. I recently made a chemical hazard inventory of all of the MSDS sheets, and that can be referred to. I've also finished scanning all of the meeting minutes.
So. It's a ton of work, and just as a comment on that, you know, she mentioned that she did the shoreline planting guide, merging that. I think working in Word would be kind of simple. It's not. You know, these you know, Seth, I know how to go at it. I mean, these are really time-consuming things. So just thank her for all of her work. And one thing that, you know, looking forward, you know, we have this internship. We've set it up, and we've put $100,000. Wow. 10-to-1 growth there. A $10,000 amount of money that we're willing to provide to this internship, of which, if you divide that out by, you know, the cost that it takes to have an intern, both with payroll expenses and insurance or what have you, not insurance, but payroll and wages, it basically equates to about 714 hours. We've had Alyssa for about 300 now, and at first it seemed like she might not be available until just basically to the end of August, but it looks like her availability may be available through basically the 714 hours that we could potentially have her. If I think we've got plenty for it to do in the next through basically mid-September, maybe end of September, depending on you know, how many days or hours in a week. That would be continuing with the water quality monitoring. We basically do that through Labor Day, but we add on basically the triathlon weekend too, because it's a big event, and if we have a cyanobacteria bloom, we're in that too. We have to keep monitoring for that too, the HABs. We've got all of the minutes scanned, which was the one archive attempt that we want, that I put forward in that internship, which I frankly thought was going to be the least favorable thing to do, you know, scanning documents. I think we have somebody that likes scanning documents. She's made quick work of it, and what we could have her do is basically scan the audits from the 80s forward, as well as the budgets from the 80s forward, which would be another really positive thing to do. And so with your consent, I would have her continue working through up to this, you know, $10,000 cost that we've allocated, appropriated. And then the other things to do are to take those minutes and that are existing and to get them on the web, because that's really the goal, is to get that the information not only saved for us and have a digital copy, but to get that out there to the public. And then also there's weeding and watering to happen with the SOS program through until it rains again, basically. And that's something that she's been working on with Seth at Regatta Grounds and at East Devils Lake State Park. So that's kind of the scope of work that I would lay out to finish this internship and just make use of the monies that are available currently.
Correct me, Paul. I thought we had already, like, allocated the money to...
You have. But I guess there was at least for us, you know, internally, there was an assumption that this wouldn't extend because of availability was going to be shorter.
Okay.
So I'm just kind of putting it out there that, you know, I think we're going to... We'll use the 18 weeks, the full 18 weeks of the internship, and get the other... these other activities that weren't necessarily part of the original scope, as far as additional scanning and things like that.
Okay. Does anybody have any issues with that?
No, I don't have an issue. I just had a question.
You're on your mic.
So, when we hired her, what was her original scope?
So it was really water quality, outreach, and archiving. The water quality is, you know, monitoring with me out Monday mornings and Wednesdays now with the HABs program. The outreach was basically the Devil's Lake Revival. That was the big major component, which now is post-tense. And then the scanning, which she mentioned, she completed the scanning of the minutes. It seemed like that was enough scanning to put on one person. But it's something that, you know, has gone rather quickly. And so there's more vital information that we have as a district that we should get archived digitally as well. So that would be the other. It would just be an expansion slightly of the original scope.
So we're going to get more done than we thought we were going to.
I think so, yeah. Absolutely.
I'm fine.
That's it? Okay, great.
Okay. Anybody else? All right. East Devils Lake Road.
Okay, so last meeting? We made that $5,000. So basically the district had... is basically making a grant, if you will, to the Salmon Drift Creek Watershed Council to supplement a similar grant from Lincoln County Public Works to do a stakeholder and grant exercise to try to find money for a fix for East Devils Lake Road. It's very much at the very beginning of this process. I'm just letting you know that... I understand that Catherine Pruitt, who was at your meeting, has had initial meetings with the county and, you know, will be basically running this forward over the next 6 to 8 months, I think, is the scope for this. So that's pretty quick thing there for you. just as a reminder that this will be kind of showing up on your agenda. We have, if I have any updates, I'll bring them forward.
All right. So new business, lake level monitoring.
So at our last meeting, you asked that we come back with just kind of a preliminary look at how we might look at evaluating your recent decision on the lake level and its impacts on properties and recreational use of the lake. What I'd propose is to do a random sample of 30 to 50 launches, or not launches, but private properties, their boats, docks, effectively, as well as all the public launches. I choose 30 to 50 because 30 is basically a very good, scientifically defendable, like statistically verifiable number. You get 30 examples of one thing in a population, you actually represent the population quite well, generally. I mean, it's kind of the magic number, 30. If you go over that, you're doing a little bit better job, but the bang for the buck becomes very diminished, and statisticians can tell you why. It's just as population statistics show. So that's why the number 30 to 50. Now, bearing in mind, though, that if you go to a site and it's been randomly selected, you don't know if that dock was built to be a boat launch dock. You don't know if it was just a little fishing pier, unless there's a boat there. That's your one indicator. But we don't necessarily know what the intent of the structure was. So that's a caveat, and it needs to be understood ahead of time that, if you find out that there's a foot of water at the end of somebody's dock, well, maybe that's what they wanted. They built a dock to go throw a line in, and they're 20 feet off the shore where before they would have been caught behind the tree, and then, they're fly fishermen. I think you know what I'm kind of trying to explain. So we don't necessarily find out, oh, there's 3 feet of water at 98% of the docks, or there's 3 feet of water at 50% of the docks, and have something that's 100%, I think, what the people's minds would try to get around that idea. So bear that in mind. We'll also be doing a photographic vegetation survey at the same time, and there's only a certain window of time that we've changed, and we haven't really changed things that much. At this point, the lake level is 4 inches, 5 inches different than it was last summer this time. Wind and wave action throws that water up the shore. It definitely has an impact within that, almost that same range that we're looking at. So, I don't think this is going to be some crystal ball kind of look forward and say, oh, we've done this great work or we've done this bad work. It's a natural life system, and I think we just have to really bear in mind that these are to document things. You may get some insight, but we need to look at this kind of broadly and understand that this is new and not much of a change, frankly. It's not like we dropped the change of the lake 20 feet or something where you'd see something very distinct. It's a pretty small window, right? So that I just think that that's really important to put out there. The other things that we'll be looking at is compiling information about septic systems that may be applicable, and then documenting fish passage, which will be the simplest one because we know that we've increased it, the window, from when the dam was put in, by putting it in mid-June versus putting it in mid-April. We've increased a two-month period when the lake's running naturally. So at that point, we'll be able to document that as well.
Okay. I know you and I had talked about at least once or twice over the course of the month around the drawdown period, evaporation, equalization, mm-hmm. whatever, for September and October. Did you post have you gotten the chance to repost the calculations with the starting level
where we were the 1st of August yet?
I've given it to the contractor, so nothing online or anything else. So we can do that.
And that starts at 9-1, so instead of the 9-6 or 8-6, it'll end up somewhere at 8-7.
I would think so. Yeah, exactly. It was, as you know, Mitchell was talking about earlier, it was basically 5 inches of drawdown.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's 3 in August, 2 in September, just by the mathematics of what the average evaporation is in those months.
Okay. Can we make sure we get that posted?
Yeah, so I'll put that on the lake level portion of our projects page, and then also get it on the Facebook just as another way of getting it out.
Okay. You know, and it may not be too bad if we do, you know, are we on target each week on our Facebook? You know,
mm-hmm.
We're going to put it out there.
Yeah, you bet.
Let people know what's going on. Thanks. Anything else from anybody?
Yeah, I got something. When we were listening to testimony, we heard a lot of varying anecdotal information regarding people's access to their docks, and you know, unless it's just financially, you know, not advisable, I was really interested in actually having an inventory, mm-hmm. and knowing exactly where someone's dock was sitting in relationship to the bottom of the lake. And I think having that inventory would help us make better decisions. And you know, particularly when things get heated, generalities don't work well because they don't. You have to have specifics in being able to document those. So that kind of concerns me about the 50 docks, because what if you forget the guy that he didn't get in the 50 and he doesn't have access in his boat? So that bothers me a little bit. Second of all, where are we on our weir?
So first off, you know, we could certainly venture to just do 400 properties. If we want to, we can shoot for that. We can start going forward with that. I have no problem doing that. It's just I was trying to take a balance point with use of time and other things. And you know, this is a high priority thing, and it, if you know, if we want to do it, we'll make it happen. We can basically, the window that I was shooting for was to try to do it in August. We can extend that through September, knowing that, you know, we're just adjusting it based on what the current lake level is. So, you know, there is a larger window of time that we could do this. So, you know, if that's the direction, that's what we'll do. And, you know, I'm fine with that.
Well, what's the rest of the board think?
He's out there doing it anyway. He's going to be going past shorelines and, you know, documenting. So, you know, if we want to target that and do as much as we can over the 2-month period, I'm fine with that, Kip. You think it'll help?
You know, I definitely, that's exactly where I stood probably 6 months ago. But the more and more that we've been studying this and talking about it, almost to the point of, you know, we've adjusted the lake 5-6 inches, and I think I'm to the point now where if my dock doesn't work for me with a 6-inch change, it's my responsibility to take care of it. If I don't like it, you know, I need to modify it. I mean, it's my personal property. So, you know, we have a neighbor to the south. He built a dock 20 feet out. He's in 2 feet of water. That's what he wanted, just something to kids jump off on, play in the water, and tie a canoe up to. Know of another dock around the corner got built this year, very shallow water. They're kayakers. Same with somebody across the lake several years ago, built one real shallow. You know, but they're kayakers and they're not interested in boats, and they didn't want to put the extra money out. So it's very subjective. But you know, if we're doing a fairly big change, you know, a foot or two, I could see maybe really having a big impact. But at 5-6 inches, I still totally understand and see this train of thought. But I'm starting to move to the point of, you know, I don't know if it's really worth the staff time. So I'm kind of in the middle of the road, torn between the two these days. Cool.
Well, I'd like the inventory portion, like Kip mentioned. I think that's a good idea. I don't think it would cost that much to collect the data. I don't want to see anybody have to spend any money on their docs because of the change we made, and I happen to agree that I don't think this was enough change to merit that, to do anything to your doc. I prefer floating docs. That's what I've always put in.
Yeah.
So... have a problem.
Okay. I guess we got 3-1.
Sure.
And then to the second part of your question, the where. So haven't made any changes to the where. I think that, what we could do is move it to the center of the lake, take it out of the shadow zone. Which is where your predation issues are existing more so. That could help. We didn't modify any of the curved bits, the lamprey bits yet. I just haven't gotten to that. The width issue, though, I guess is kind of what had kind of held me up on that a little bit. I know that one of your comments was, why do we have to have the minimum of fish passage? Why don't we have the maximum? Well, the maximum, would be no dam, but we could have some medium, I guess, some midpoint, which maybe it's, maybe it's 6 feet a section that's open. And if that'll hold the water back, then why not? But maybe it's only a foot and a half. Maybe it's versus like the 8 inches that we have. Maybe we can go a little bit wider and still retain and still impound. And I guess that's the point that we'd have to have something that is flexible linearly across the dam as well as vertically. The last time we modified that structure, we had something that we had so we could limit the depth of the exit. To minimize it to 6 inches of depth, which is the minimum, and then still go all the way down to the cement if we wanted to too. But what we could do is have something that it does both directions. And I just have to work with Bill Sexton, who is who I'd have to do it. I mean, we're under contract with him for about 20 hours of work each year, which would fit right into that. And just have him build something that could do both and let him kind of figure it out, as far as how to make that happen. It might have to be some kind of arching thing or something, I don't know. It may not happen this season, I guess would be the caveat.
Doing that was part of the rationale that we used for not removing the dam.
Mm-hmm.
And that made good sense at the time. So
mm-hmm.
I just hate to see that just kind of forgotten. I mean, we have a commitment.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I can...
Kip, would you be okay with it making that a wintertime project?
Didn't want... I mean, we hadn't even mentioned it since then. Mm-hmm. Just kind of holding your feet to the fire. I mean, that was a part of the process that we went through.
Mm-hmm. No, thank you. Yeah, and... I hadn't forgotten it. It was just kind of this one issue of timing and design, and hadn't really had enough time to put into the thought process of a design. It's not going to be extravagantly new or different, but it is going to take a little bit of thought on my part in working with Bill. And if I can, grab him and get him, get some of his hours in the next month or so, I will. But I think just from a scheduling standpoint on my end would be where that's going to be difficult. Just trying to get other things going still that are kind of holding out there as well. So, but thank you, and we'll do it. We'll definitely have it for next season.
Do you think maybe by next month you could calculate. We've had this issue brought up a few times. I think it was earlier today, too. The Chinook winds irrigation usage affecting the lake level. I know we got the calculations for the full usage at one point a few months ago, but maybe during the August-September drawdown, what actual effect it could have if they, because I think their flow rate is like 24/7, isn't it, once calculated?
The total height change that could have happened, could happen, and bearing in mind that this is not done, it's not actually, they're not sucking water out of the lake right now, would be an inch and 5/16 on a 680-acre footprint lake. So
per year.
That's an annual, yeah. And it's just, you know, an inch and 5/16.
So in a month's time, it wouldn't really affect the drawdown in August, September.
Well, what was originally noted in that application was that the drawdown, and I'd have to look at this because this is new question for me today.
Theoretically,
tonight.
It does reduce the inputs to the lake, right?
Yeah.
The point of diversion is still from a tributary,
right?
So it's still reducing the input to the lake rather than. The input-output equalization is the same. The question I think you're asking is, what is their monthly capability to pull out?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Monthly.
They can't pull it all in 1 month, right?
Right. So. Yeah, I mean, I have to look at their... It was, you know, 75 acre-feet, I think, is the number that sticks in my head. And that's where we get, of a 680-acre lake, some almost, you know, inch and a half.
I guess what I'm looking for is, you know, to the answer to some of the questions that have been brought forward, what is the impact, is there impact to the lake from that irrigation right in the drawdown period of August, September?
So, yeah, we can look into that. And, like, you know, basically from my recollection is that, you know, as what David was alluding to, it's pre-dam. It's like above the dam,
okay.
You know. So that the input that would be extracted wouldn't have to go out the end because it would have been extracted. And so our drawdown is going to be our own drawdown. That's what we're going to be limited to, the 5 inches. We're not going to be 5 inches and then whatever, making sure that they, you know, it looks like they took an inch and 5/16, you know, because we don't, we're impounding, we're doing a junior water right to that extraction. So our junior water right is what we will be working from. And so, you know, we'll have to get clarity, but to my estimation, yeah, you've taken out water ahead of the stream. That water never came into the impoundment area, so therefore it couldn't leave.
This is what I want to think.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'll try to get a hold of Beeman to get some clarity on that for you.
I'm really thick on this sort of thing, but that inch and 5/16, would any if that wasn't taken out, would any of that have gone over the dam?
All of it would have.
All of it. So they're really not taking anything, are they? I mean, it's water that we would not have in the lake anyway. It would have already passed, or it would be passing.
Yeah, provided, you know.
But would have no effect at all, would it? I mean, there would be no inch and 5/16.
Well, as we're drying the lake down, if they're physically just pulling the water off the top of it, you know, as long as we're showing that the lake's going down 5 inches, I think we're going to be fine. We're meeting our, as I understand how we went through this process now a year plus ago, 2 years ago now, I'm not even remembering. It was, you know, the 5 inches, you know, there, yeah, exactly. That water would just pass through it. You know, we're impounding water. We're not, like, using water, like, in an extraction kind of thing, whereas that's what they're doing. They're extracting it. We're just impounding it, and then we're just, you know, manipulating how much we're impounding to compensate for inputs to match the outputs. And if the inputs have been reduced, that's, you know, beyond our control, then the outputs are the same reduced, mm-hmm. you know. The thing about just making sure water is available, you know, with that impoundment right, or with that, I just want to, you know, chase this down a little bit, because this Rock Creek water right that the city owns, that they are going to be leasing to the Confederated Tribes, Sluts, Indians, Chinook, Winds, is actually benefiting Devil's Lake and the fish that live in Devil's Lake. And I think that that should be really clear. Because instead of water being taken out of a system 3.5 miles upstream, and that water not being shared by the humans and the fish, it would just be taken by the humans. And so instead of extracting it upstream, the water's coming into the lake, providing the cooling benefit of that water coming into the lake and through the wetlands, which is key, healthful, as well as just having quantity there. So really, you know, this was a benefit to the lake, as well as having it been, if they would have just taken the water from, say, Rock Creek up the hill. And then additionally, by taking lake water that's you know, full of nutrients as a result of being mixed with you know, lake sediment and what have you, you're actually creating nutrient-rich water for irrigation that is actually in counter to what they do currently, which is provide chlorinated water for irrigation, which isn't going to be nutrient-rich, which is going to sterilize the grass and basically kill the grass, and then have to supplement that kind of dead grass with more fertilizer. So, you know, when we wrote our letter, when we supported this process, it had a lot to do with the nutrients that would be continually poured on the golf course from a bag of fertilizer, but from instead using the lake water and actually extracting nutrients out of the lake. So it actually is a real benefit to the lake over what the existing practice is. And so I think that we want to make sure that that's clear. Because, you know, if there is some controversy that is created around 1 5/16 inch of water, then there's some cost-benefit analysis that has gone into that as well. And I think we need to be cognizant of that, that we are, you know, in support of you know, we acknowledge that the district or that the golf course is there. It's been there. Devil's Lake Golf Course, it's a 9-hole golf course before I came here. I know it was there from the 40s or something, right? Became Lakeside, became Chinook Winds. It's there. It's part of our community. They currently irrigate that with water out of Schooner Creek, which is what we use for drinking water, which serves this building and which serves all the North County for water mostly. Now, instead of doing that, they're using an existing water right that the city already has that used to serve Ocean Lake, the town that also benefited from that golf course probably back in the 40s. And so I think it's important to look at this over a long haul too. And instead of taking chlorinated water and irrigating a golf course, they're taking nutrient-rich water and irrigating a golf course, and then therefore being able to use less fertilizer, which would come down into the lake. So those are some of the elements that are important, I think, to share and to be cognizant of. A
couple of questions, Paul. Where's the extraction point in the lake?
So the Sluts POD, what they're calling it, the Sluts Point of Diversion, is a pipe that was drilled under the lake at the northwest arm of the lake on the east side of that arm. So the Confederated Tribes of Sluts Indians owns the parcel that's between... So if
it's right up by Blue Heron Landing.
Yeah, it's right across from Blue Heron Landing. Simple. Thank you.
Yes.
And it's a pipe that they put in, and then they bored a pipe also underneath the highway to their irrigation pump house.
Is there any site that would be more beneficial to the lake for them to extract water? I mean, do we have a higher areas of the lake that we have higher nutrient concentrate?
No. Nutrients are 100% like miscible in water, and so they're going to dissolve and become more or less equilibrium throughout the lake. So it's certainly just proximity. They chose the site for proximity. The fact that they were going to be the least amount of impact to wetlands because of where they actually started drilling from, other things like that. Those were the reasons to go there.
And are they going to move to using fertilizers that aren't full of phosphates?
Well, you know, that's a discussion that we haven't had with them specifically, but the what we did have was just the reduction of fertilizers and fungicides generally too, because healthy grass doesn't need to be zapped as much either, so that was expected as well. And you know, that it just makes sense.
Is any of our staff in the position to talk to them regarding what type of fertilizers they use? I mean, would that be a productive conversation?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think it's you know, there's, you don't need a lot of phosphorus out there to grow grass and other things. And phosphorus tends to be the one that sticks around the longest. And so you can buy at your local hardware store fertilizers that will, you know, supplement what's existing on the soil already that doesn't have any phosphorus. And then if we're talking about you know, growing things that don't need phosphorus, well, there's a thousand plants that don't need anything because they're natives, and they're adapted to what falls out of the sky and what comes down the hill naturally. So you know, I don't encourage anyone to use fertilizer around the lake or any excess on property that's, you know, arable soils all through the Midwest are over-fertilized, and the consequences of that are pretty significant. You know, it goes downstream, it goes down to the Gulf of Mexico, and it comes a big blue-green algae bloom out the Mississippi Delta. I mean, that's no surprise that thing turns green as well. You know, over nutrients, over fertilizing is a problem, and so we could have those discussions. I don't know the superintendent now currently, but I can find that out. I mean, they had some changes in the last couple of years, but of golf maintenance.
What do you guys think?
Fine with it. I know that we brought it up in the past, and Mr. Weldon's gotten our local hardware store to start doing phosphorus free, so.
Wynn's representative here, remember right, the conversation, he was open to kind of giving us an update after the first hole use one summer, mm-hmm. to see what kind of reduction in fertilizer they were, mm-hmm. they, you know, it had worked out for him.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe the end of summer it might be interesting to contact him, seeing if it's actually turned out that way.
Yeah, and I think, you know, now, just to put them on notice that we'd be interested in finding that out, would be even better. So, yeah, we can do both of those things.
Anything else? Okay, we've got a stage.
Sorry. Your packet, I replicated a publication that this group is from the Ford Family Foundation has put together. The Ford Family Foundation is a private nonprofit foundation that's basically been leading this project here in Lincoln City to get community members together to come up with a project that they themselves would then fund in part. And what these, your local neighbors and friends have decided that they would like to pursue is to build a stage at Regatta Grounds. And they were at the Devil's Lake Revival demonstrating what they would like to do with this stage that... some of you may remember the stage that used to be at Regatta Grounds, and they had music events and things like that, and it was a real exciting point in the community. And, you know, they, through their process, have decided that this is the one that they want to try to do. And in order to get some match money, they are offering these pavers that they're selling, quote unquote, where you'd basically get a sponsorship for $100. You'd get a brick that would have your name on it or what have you. You would be, you know, recognized therefore by being a participant to this process, and you know, have that name recognition, but then also just supporting the people that are doing the bulk of this work and the other matching dollars that have come from the Ford Family Foundation. So I think their full budget is $12,000. I think the Ford family is putting in $5,000 of that or something, if I remember right. And this would be a stage at Regatta Grounds, just kind of, if you're looking at the from the lake, kind of a third of the way up the hill on the left side, or left center. Kind of, you know, so that your audience would be sitting on the hill looking down at the stage, and then would have the lake in the background, just like what they had in the 80s and 90s.
Well, I have a couple of questions about it. If you know the answers, great. First of all, what happened to the old stage, and why didn't they rebuild it if it went bad?
It rotted away. I remember nails sticking up out of it, and it just became a hazard, and I think they just tore it down. It just became a maintenance issue.
And the second one is, who owns it after it's built?
I assume the city of Lincoln City. It'd be on their property, so that would be my guess, yeah.
Do you think they'd be required by taking it over, required to maintain it, since they didn't maintain the last one?
Well, yeah, I mean, there would be, things have a lifetime, you know, as you know. There's maintenance, and there's, if you're going to keep pouring money into something, you know, it's going to take, at some point there might be a decision, you know, and I can't speak for the city as to how they would do that, you know, if it would, like, oh, we'll keep it alive for an extra, you know, life and a half, or if it's, you know, I don't know the answer to that, but I assume that, yeah, the city would be the one that would take ownership of it, yeah, it would just be like another amenity in the park.
Are we interested in having amenities in the park? Is that something we can or can't do?
Well, the district.
Well, but I mean, yeah. Something. Something.
Yeah, no, you know.
Besides that,
our mission includes supporting, you know, encouraging, having recreation as a component in our mission, and this is and public access. So this would be, I mean, you have public access point to get to the lake. Okay, you just take your boat. Well, if you don't have a boat, and if you're not if you're a land lover, you know, you can still have access to the lake. You know, you can have a trail around the lake or something, you know, that would provide you access to the lake and use to the lake and kind of share that. So this I see as wholeheartedly being something that the district could participate in. And I think what's being put on the table right now is a $100 brick donation at the very smallest. I think if you are interested in the project, I think, you know, maybe we should have a talk directly with some of the people that are really connected to the project and say, hey, you know, maybe there's more that the district would want to contribute. I don't know. But at the very low end, I would say a brick donation would be, you know, definitely sensible and provide recognition to the district as a contributor and supporting, like I said, supporting the many hours that have already gone into this from volunteers to be part of this Ford Family Foundation organization. They met for like 6, 7, 8 months or something on this, as I understand, like a group of like 30 people. You know, it's not a small component of our constituency, you know, that's already dedicated themselves to coming up with a plan and then choosing one that's on our lake, you know. So I'm just going to leave it at that. I think it's something that's of value. I would recommend the district at least buy a brick, if not more. You know, maybe, yeah, just leave it at that. And also welcome the public to connect with the Ford Family Foundation too, because there are additional bricks that are for sale, as I understand too.
Yeah, my son bought me a brick.
Yeah, nice. Yeah.
He's a good boy.
Do we have any motions?
I move that we donate $100 for a brick for this purpose.
Do I have a second? Additional discussion?
Can we do a little more than 100? Just a question.
You could buy your son a brick. Be a good father.
Yeah.
So,
I would go for 100. I would go for more on record, but
okay.
That's what it is.
So we have a second. We have further discussion.
Well, I'm all for raising money for this, so I will personally buy a brick, but I don't know if we want to do so as a... So.
I will personally buy one as well. So.
Yes. Pressure's on you.
Okay. So all those in favor of the district buying a brick?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Okay. So erosion prevention.
All right. So this is something we haven't seen for a while, and there's an opportunity to resurrect the erosion prevention sediment control seminar, if you will. And basically, this is called out by ordinance within the city of Lincoln City, of which we helped pass this ordinance in the 90s to have an erosion control ordinance in the city of Lincoln City for a number of reasons, particularly for water quality. You know, runoff from a construction site is significant if it's unabated. And I always like to say that, you know, you can go into an excavator can create 1,000 years worth of erosion in an afternoon. And so, you know, if we need to be mindful of these time periods when there's a lot of, you know, earth moving activity, et cetera. So the actual workshop that we are, you know, to have the city and the district are to hold generally occurs September, October. September is to be named Erosion Prevention and Sediment Control Month, I think, by the City of Lincoln City. I think we could ourselves declare it as well. Because this can be kind of a time-consuming thing, there was an opportunity to just have it have one speaker, and the city has agreed to pay for that speaker. And then we would basically organize some vendors, which we've done in the past, advertise it and get some people to fill the seats and get them in here. We typically would have spent about $500 at the most supporting this event, and that might be used for, say, meals to encourage people to come. And so that's kind of the framework. The event will be held in these chambers in the city council. Is it October 25th, I think?
That's what it says.
Okay. Yeah, October 25th, tentatively 8 to 1, which then, you know, we would, you know, put this out to contractors and to homeowners, but it's really to the construction folks, which would be the aim. With your approval, I would use up to $500 of our budgeted monies to support this. And if so, then I'll work on the other logistics of getting a few vendors. Typically, we have a vendor that sells erosion fencing or has other type of technologies that are new and to bring in and get people in here. It's been a really pretty positive thing. We did it I think at least four of the now would be five of the 7 years that I've been here. So it's just the last couple of years it just kind of fell off the radar, I think, of ours and the city's. And the window is opened up to do it, and so we've got it on the schedule. But I'd like to get the district's additional financial support to get, you know, like I said, probably to buy some lunches, that sort of thing.
And we have that in the budget already?
Yeah. Yeah, we've budgeted for this, I believe. You know, if not, it could come out of something else. I have to check. I honestly forgot to look at that specific budget line because we've always had $500 sitting there, so I just assumed it was still sitting there. We could take a break. I could look it up online. You know, it's not that big a deal. But if not, you know, with your authority, we'd still have access to $500, which we could make use for that.
Okay. Your comments from the board?
We do.
Yeah. You got a motion for me?
Yeah, I'll make a motion to authorize Paul to spend up to $500 for the erosion prevention and sediment control seminar.
Second?
Second.
Any discussion? Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Okay. NOMS.
Okay, so the North American Lake Management Society meeting is being held in Madison, Wisconsin this year. The district contracts, you know, the contract they have with myself, it says that I'm supposed to attend meetings of interest for the lake and for the district. This is typically the preeminent event held in North America, which we typically have attended in the past. And November 7th through the 9th is the dates. I've given you some quotes on the prices. They actually just had listed the registration the day that I sent this staff report out. So those conference fees actually on the next page are actually listed in detail, which you have a discount if you do it earlier and decide earlier. Airfare is cheaper if you do it earlier often, that sort of thing. So that's why I'm bringing it forward now. And what was the other thing I was going to suggest on that?
So, hey, Paul.
Sure.
I think, you know, for me, before I even consider making a decision on this, I'd like to know. And I see that we don't have to do this until for early registration until September 14th, which is good. But I'd like to see a list of what you plan on attending and how that maps to the current goals of the district and the activities that we have going on to see how this conference would directly support the activities that we're doing right now before I would be comfortable in authorizing, you know,
I'd like
the trip to go.
Yeah, it's a good idea.
Assume they have their agenda and their schedules posted, workshops, etc.
They haven't at this time. It there's a lag period. They you know, when I just checked it, they had just got the registration price down.
Okay.
So if they had done it, I would definitely would have gotten that already out to you. But we can bring that back for September meeting.
Our meeting is before the 14th, correct?
I believe it is. I think it's like the 9th or something.
Okay.
Actually, I do have a calendar.
The 13th?
The 13th.
Okay.
So right under the bell.
Right under the bell. Perfect. Is everybody okay with that? All right.
Yes.
Okay. So can we move to non-agenda items?
Okay. I've got a couple. If it's all right, if I start, if you want to, someone else has one. The goal setting workshop that you wanted to have in, I think it was late fall was kind of the goal, October. And if you want to have it on Saturday, I'd propose either the 13th or the 20th of October. If you want to pick a different day of the week, you know, we can do that too. I just, from the Saturdays that were available, the 13th or 20th from the district's point, from my point of standpoint, would be preferential. Do you want to do it on a Saturday? I know that.
I think a Saturday would be good. I think historically we've always done it on a Saturday, haven't we?
The ones that I've held with the district, yeah, I don't know when you're going back in time in the 90s, I don't know. You know, I think that the key is getting you all here you're the ones that are setting the goals for the district. You know, if you know the public input aspect is greater on a Saturday, then you know I would encourage you to do that as well. But you also have other ways of getting public input on things like this too. So you don't, you know, be mindful of that. The important part is to get you all here. You know.
Anybody have any issue with the 13th of October?
I think that meeting would be on the 10th or something. Or what would that be? Actually, I do have a calendar today.
It's on the 11th. October 11th.
Yeah, so October 11th is the second Thursday. So the 13th would be that Saturday straight after that. So might work better for you, David, and for others. If there's no conflict, I mean, we can just schedule that.
You have a 13th. Let's go ahead and schedule that for the 13th.
Yep.
All right. Thank you, Paul.
And then I just wanted to make a quick announcement that rental reduction, that lease agreement thing that we were working on, went through. So we'll have some relief on that. And thank to Mr. Larry Brown for bringing that to the district's attention. And then lastly, as has been the case for the last 6 years, I've presented a outstanding service award to one of the board members of the district. And it's basically just to their exceptional contribution. I know that all the board members do a great job. I just like to make an additional effort to when we see even more time spent. And Mr. Kip Ward, I would like to honor you tonight. The amount of effort that you have put in over the last year is substantial.
Is there any monetary?
There is. You can sell us on eBay for $1.32 or to the highest bidder. It just says Devils Lake Water Improvement District Outstanding Service Award is hereby presented to Kip Ward for his time and dedication during fiscal year 2011-2012.
Thank you, Paul. I went from dumber to dumb. Yes.
Well, his comment is reflective to all the work that he did spend researching the miles of pages that are online and the work that it goes into understanding the complexity of a lake and it has been significant, and I wanted to acknowledge that. And I also wanted to acknowledge it for your work in getting us in this building. That's a big component also that you spent on early, right out of the gate. It was that public participation side of things, and I think to the credit of this broadcast tonight. So that as well is why I selected you among your peers. So they also work very hard, and appreciate all the work that all of you gentlemen have done over the years.
Randy and David in particular have schooled me quite a bit. So I had never been out on the lake. until Pat, you took me out, and then yeah, you were number two. So thanks, you guys.
So let's give us.
Any additional non-agenda items? Okay. Public comment? Does anybody have further comment?
Just a couple more words. I wanted to note that the reference to the session on the rain gardens, that you gave a reference to Green Girl PDX for finding out about it, and it shows it being August 25th, so you might want to update that to the October date. So
there's two different events.
There are.
There's a rain garden
so
training.
Yep.
Okay. Both of them are going to be by Maria Cahill. Right. So there's a rain garden training, which is October 25th, and that one we really encourage all the public, all lakefront people to attend.
Right.
And then there's the erosion control training, which is October 25th.
One's
okay.
August.
Okay, I thought that you were talking about the range. Yeah. Okay, great. Well, at least I went.
But thank you for bringing the awareness up, because we want to get people to that August event, which will be at the community center, 10 to 12. It's just be a short course, and then the erosion prevention sediment control one will be like a longer.
I thought he had said during the rain garden one that was the October 25th date when we were talking earlier, but maybe. But now we know it's both. Anyway.
Yeah.
Also, I guess these are on the additional items. On the dock measurement thing, I would just encourage, and I know I said this before, that maybe some sort of a criteria get set up that maybe could be reviewed or to where those measurements are going to be, because just measuring the end of the dock is, you're going to be, next year everybody's going to criticize that and say it's not worthy of the time, because you have to kind of measure it. You know, maybe you measure the end, and maybe you measure it at a distance back where the propeller would be, but it doesn't really, the end of the dock doesn't matter. Also, suggest maybe in that it might make it easier. You know, DSL just did a survey of the entire lake, and they have images and maps and the sizes and all kinds of things of all those. You might be able to get a hold of their database to use as something to kind of make a reference on, and save yourself a lot of documentation once you make those measurements, if they'll share that with you.
Yeah, we have a copy.
Yep.
The other thing, do you have a question?
We do have a copy of it, so.
Pardon me?
The DSL layer.
You have it?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. That might be a great place to note all those measurements. There's a little bit of a discussion about, again, the lake height as it relates to the golf course draw, and maybe I didn't make it clear, but I know I thought about that a long time, just because it sort of is a little mind-bending. But when we use the evaporation method, really, it doesn't matter what the golf course is drawing, because we're going to drop it down, in theory, how much the world would evaporate it, the lake. And so all you're really changing is how much water flows over the dam. It's a pretty simple way to look at it. So the water draw from the lake is really, by the golf course, has no impact on lake level, really. My view of it. As far as modifying the weir, I would maybe suggest you get professional help on the design of that, because what seems to make sense doesn't. I spent quite a bit of time talking to an ODFW person on the design of the dam, and he was surprised to learn that we didn't have a trapezoidal notch, because that's the typical design. He says it's a misnomer that bigger is better, because the fish don't just sit there and try to go over. They actually line up in a row, and they have a very precise way that they go out. And as the lake lowers, they make the slots trapezoidal to increase or keep the same volume of water flowing out as the lake level goes down. And so what seems to make sense doesn't necessarily. So I would encourage you to get, Tetra Tech or somebody to help you with the design on that. And also on the lamprey thing, there's been a huge amount of work done at Bonneville Dam, and there's a great video on OPP's Ecotrope site about how and what they did there, but there might be a real simple solution there. They just made a metal flue that looks kind of like a heat duct, if you will, and that's enough for the lamprey to be able to kind of come in and basically suck their way into the lake all year long, and you might be able to do something very easily and cost-effectively to accommodate them. And that's all. I just wanted to make those comments.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Any additional public comment? Okay. Board comments and announcements. Comments by board members. I'll just thank the crew and everybody for putting on a good revival this year. Thanks. You did a great job.
That was Seth. He did a great job, and I mean, we supported him, but all the organization, all that, all the back work, and on the end is a tribute to him. So
thank you Seth.
Yeah,
I go back to thanking that long list of people.
Okay, any additional comments? Okay, I'll adjourn our meeting then.